Hello and welcome to episode 85 of the Blue Cup Tools podcast. I am Francisco Gonzalez, also known as Grundislav, and with me, as always...
Hello, I am Ben Chandler, also known as Ben304.
How are you on this lovely December day?
I'm good. It's been hot lately, like summer.
Yeah.
In the southern hemisphere.
Yeah.
So I'm kind of, you know, I'm a little over the heat and all that, but I'm good. How about you? Are you cold yet there? You're nearly into winter.
No, it's been unseasonably ridiculously warm. It hasn't dipped below 40 degrees, which is about 8 degrees for you Celsius. Yeah, it hasn't snowed. Usually at this time of year, it's snowed at least once or twice. We've had a few flurries, but no, it's been unseasonably warm, and quite frankly, I think Al Gore was right. But that's neither here nor there, I suppose.
No, he wasn't.
No, he wasn't. I heard a story on a podcast once about someone who went into a bathroom and peed next to Al Gore at the urinal, and he just farted really loudly, and he said, well... So, that's
well,
a story.
Well, I mean, he's a human being. He's
Yeah, I know. Well, I mean, presumably he's a human being. I think he's been accused of being a robot on several occasions.
He's a mammal.
Okay, I guess. He's not, a replicant.
Right, so our bodies are full of stuff.
Yes, of course.
And sometimes that needs to come out.
Yes, you'd know more than anyone else.
If you don't sort of excrete the waste matter, the metabolic waste, then you fill up, you're literally full of shit.
Thank you for the science lesson, Mr. Wizard. Thank you. But anyway, yeah, I'm going to be going down to Miami for the holidays, so I'm going into even hotter weather. So basically,
yeah, it's going to be awful and humid.
Yeah, it'll basically be summer weather again, just like you're having. So there you go.
It was funny because we used to be able to commiserate about the hot, humid weather.
Yeah.
Now I'm all by my lonesome.
No, well, I'll be able to commiserate with you for the next 10 days or so. Yeah, anyway...
It's a thought that counts.
Yeah, of course. Anyway, aside from that, what have you been up to? We haven't podcasted in a bit. What have you got?
I've been busy, you know, just doing... You know, I help run a few events locally, and we get a little orchestra down from the city to do a Christmas carols thing, and that's always, you know... That's a three-day sort of event to set up for and pack up for. And
now, when you say the city, do you mean... Perth, or do you mean somewhere closer?
No, I mean Perth.
Oh, okay.
So, yeah, and I've there's just been lots of different stuff going on. So, I don't really have a lot to talk about. I've started work on the next game for Where Jedi Game, my sixth Where Jedi title I've started work on, so that's cool.
Cool.
I'm now working at 640 by 360 resolution.
That's interesting. What were the 40 extra pixels for?
Well, it's changing the aspect ratio,
the
Francisco.
Lack of the 40 pixels. I see. Oh, right.
Yeah, we're going from 16 to 10 to 16 to 9, which is a more modern sort of aspect ratio.
I would say that's true. Now, are you using...
Yeah, so it actually fits on my screen properly without weird stretching or weird pillar boxing or anything like that.
And that's pretty cool. So, are you using, or is Dave using the new version of AGS that allows for custom resolutions?
I believe so.
I see. Okay, well, that's cool.
It might even be a baked-in resolution, I'm not sure, but whatever.
Dunno. Anyway.
Whatever, that's not merely my side of things. I don't have to think anymore. I just
You're just a mindless automaton that says, me draw
that produces backgrounds and animations, yeah. Okay. Yeah, so that's been interesting. I've changed a few things. I've changed up how I do a few things, and... You know, it's always weird stepping out of your comfort zone, and I'm not so much stepped out of my comfort zone, but just slight changes.
Okay.
You know, so everything takes a little bit longer, everything takes a little bit more care, or you notice the mistakes of you. But you get away with a lot at 320 by 200.
Yeah, you do.
So now I'm getting away with, you know, I can't get away with quite so much. So,
Well, I mean, yeah.
And how have you been? I know you went to Adventure X recently. Would you like to tell the children about that experience?
I would like to tell the children about that experience.
I'll suckle on my barley sugar and listen to you.
Okay. I had Turkish Delight while I was at Adventure
I
X.
I love Turkish Delight. You know,
I've never had it before.
Did you get the good stuff that comes in, like, the tin with, like, the powdered sugar surrounding it?
Well, it didn't come in a tin because it was at a restaurant. It was given to us for dessert. But yeah, it was little cubes covered in powdered sugar.
Of gelatinous rose water covered in powdered sugar. What more do you want from life? It's delicious.
I don't know. It was good.
It was I love Turkish delight. I really love it.
I had read something on Facebook or something recently that said how C.S. Lewis's biggest trick of or mastery of fantasy was to convince American children that they would like Turkish delight. And I thought,
was that not a common thing before Narnia books?
Well, I don't think Turkish delight is a particularly American confectionery, and so
you guys have Hershey's. If it's not Hershey's, then you're usually not or Reese's.
Pretty
you're
much,
usually not interested in. Yeah,
pretty much. But so I was under the impression that it was one of those things that was like an acquired taste or something. But no, I liked it a lot.
Oh no, had you never had it before?
No, it was my first time.
Wow! Oh my goodness!
I know, right?
Yeah, no, I've had it. You know, regularly since I was a child, and I've always adored Turkish delight.
Oh, good. I also thought it was funny that we had Turkish delight at a Turkish restaurant. It seemed a bit, I guess, appropriate. Anyway, so yeah,
that'd be like being delighted by having Chinese food at a Chinese restaurant.
Well, I do like Chinese food. Woo!
I know that's true.
Anyway, oh boy, my heater is going to start making funny noises.
Yeah, that's right.
Anyway,
it's a regular guest.
It is a regular guest. You're right. Heaty the heater. How are you doing?
Bang. Dude, don't do this. Don't do this. This podcast's low quality enough as it is. Don't blemish it further.
Baldur's Gate. Anyway, so. Oh, yeah. So I went to AdventureX this past weekend.
It's fucking exceptional, I'll have you know.
Uh-huh. I went to AdventureX this past weekend, which was in London. It was at Goldsmiths University. It was a change in venue from last year when it was at London South Bank University. And this year was cool. It was a lot more focused. Last year there was three rooms where there was like demos and talks and things going on at the same time. So people kind of had to choose which one they wanted to go see. This time around it was just people exhibiting their games out in the lobby area and just one auditorium dedicated to all the talks and presentations. So that was cool. Yeah, it was sensible, and it was a nice little two-day event. I gave a few talks. I gave a talk which was a post-mortem of A Golden Wake. I also led a panel, and I gave a presentation of Shardlight the following day. And Dave gave a talk, and several other developers gave talks. Rem Mikalski, who did Downfall and the Cat Lady, he gave a talk about... Well, he presented the Cat Lady. Jan Kavan, who worked on Julia, did a post-mortem of Julia.
Play music there? He's a great musician.
He didn't. He didn't, actually. Yeah, no,
that's disappointing.
He didn't play any live music, sadly. I mentioned already, Dave gave a talk about emotion and engineering empathy in games. There was a couple of special guests. One was Ian Thomas, who he specializes in like LARPing, but he talked about some really cool LARP events that he puts together. And just as a hobbyist and like for friends, there's one called God Rest Ye Merry that he talked about. And they go through a really, really rigorous and detailed process in putting this stuff together. It's basically a 48-hour LARP thing where people come together and it's set in the 50s and it's supposed to be in a haunted house or whatever. So everyone gets their role and they have to dress in costumes and they don't really sleep much because they're getting scared the whole time. But the people, they take pictures of them and they do stuff like they'll Photoshop their faces into paintings and they'll print them out and hang them on the wall, so it's kind of like your ancestors or whatever. The person who LARPs is the author. They make fake penguin book covers of books that they've written just to really immerse them. And he talked about like this special effect that they do to make ghosts, and it sounded really cool.
It sounds like an episode of Scooby-Doo where you find out the trick to make ghosts.
Except you don't find out the trick. Bit. But yeah. He was cool. And then Steve Ince was also a special guest, and he talked about... he basically talked about writing and characters and things like that. So that was pretty cool. But yeah, I met a lot of people. I met a lot of podcast listeners, actually. I met Egghead Cheesy Bird, or Alex... I met Jenny Patterson for a bit, which shamefully, I mean, not shamefully, but it was a shame that she was sick, so she couldn't really hang out as much as she would have liked, but she...
We were chatting the other day, and she said, oh, I hope people didn't think I was antisocial, and I said, I'm pretty sure most people can empathize or sympathize with someone being unwell, and
yeah. I felt especially bad because she'd been really looking forward to it, and she basically was only able to sit at her booth and just be like, "I'm patient zero. I'm sorry." So, but you know, it was good. It was good to chat with her a bit. It was good to catch up with all the AGSers and old friends and make some new friends. And as I mentioned, Tom Cole, he was one of the organizers. He did a fantastic impersonation of our podcast, which was basically hee-hee-hee, Baldur's Gate, hee-hee-hee, Baldur's Gate. So thanks for that.
Okay,
Tom.
But what's his impersonation of the podcast?
That was his impersonation.
Oh, I just thought that was a normal part of our podcast.
Oh.
Was that convincing?
See? Anyway, actually, I did a little litmus test to gauge who listened to our podcast. I would throw in a
you
little...
you are the most amazing narcissist I can even imagine.
I was doing a little, it was like a little code phrase secret handshake, you know. So I was like, hey, I'm gonna ask Steve Ince if Charles Cecil is an embarrassed crocodile, and if people laughed and sort of nodded knowingly, I knew that they were listeners, and if they looked at me with blank stares, I said, hey, you should listen to the Blue Code. No, I didn't actually go that far. Anyway, but Adventure X was a good time.
Did you actually see Charles Cecil there?
No, he wasn't there.
He was probably too embarrassed to show his scaly face.
He probably was.
That toothy smile would be recognized by anybody.
Probably. And of course, everybody asked about you, and they were like, hey, you should bring Ben along. And I said, well, if I could fit him in a suitcase, I would.
But... Listen, I haven't finished hunting all the crocodiles here in Australia. UK's next, but Australia first.
I still got
a few crocs here left to deal with.
Crocky. Also, the other night were the Playcrafting Awards. Playcrafting NYC had their first annual awards show, and somehow Shardlight got nominated. Because the only requirements to be nominated were you had to show your game at one of the Playcrafting demo nights or expos, and I had shown Shardlight at the Fall Expo and their most recent demo night. So we were very graciously nominated in Best Visuals and Best Sound, and Nathaniel Chambers, our composer, actually flew out from LA to be here for the awards.
Oh my god!
For 2 days. Well, I mean, he used to live here, so he used it as an excuse to not only, you know, to visit New York and catch up with old friends, but also...
Okay, because I knew that he was there, like, Dave told me that he was there, but I didn't... You made it sound like he flew there just for the awards. I was like, are you kidding
me? Well, I mean, he kind of did. That was his main purpose for coming.
Wow.
So, yeah, he was only here for 2 days. He left already. But we won Best Visuals, so that was cool. And I got to go up on stage and deliver a message that you told me to deliver to the people, so that was fun.
You didn't deliver the first message.
I thought the first message was a little too cynical and self...
Do you think it was a bit disrespectful honor that had been bestowed upon?
I did. I felt it was a little ungrateful, so I told a couple of people afterwards that that's what you wanted me to say, and they laughed, so at least some people got the message, but not everyone. So there was that.
There's actually a video of that you showed me. I was most pleased.
There is a video. It cuts off just before the giant laugh of the audience, which was good. I felt bad because like everyone else came up and like they gave these really nice sweet speeches like, oh, thank you to this person and thank you to this person, and then there was this one guy.
And I literally just prepped you with telling them all to play more DOS games.
Yeah. I mean, to be fair, I was just the proxy because, you know, I was just given a message to give, so that's fine. It's not like
I remember I once got an award in the UK and a journalist, I forget who, got up and basically made up my acceptance speech and put on a really bad Australian accent for me.
Oh man, I should have done that.
I was so delighted.
I should have done that. Oh well.
You
next time.
Yeah, but they chose to do this of their own accord, and I was most pleased.
Mm. I considered it actually, but I figured it wouldn't be, people wouldn't know what was going on. So,
well,
anyway,
people rarely do when it's me.
That's true. That's very true. Yeah, so I just got back from the post office before recording the podcast, where I mailed you the little trophy.
I can't believe that we get a plaque and a trophy. That's crazy.
Yeah, it was pretty cool. It was pretty cool.
Because Dave was like, what do you want to do with the thing? I was like, hang it in the office. It's like the company, you know.
Yeah, the company wall of trophies, I suppose.
Yeah, once we've got more, like, stuff.
Yeah.
Hopefully
yeah.
we'll win
well,
all
hopefully
the one
we'll
thing
get more
at
stuff.
Some point.
Yeah,
you know.
Hopefully. So, yeah, that was a good time. And aside from that, I haven't really been up to much else aside from... Oh, well, I actually started working on my next project, too. But it's...
Yeah, it's kind of... We're kind of in that period where we're sort of...
We're taking a little break.
Shadlock's not finished, but right. we're, you know, it's very close.
We need to... I think it's always good towards the end of a project, unless you're, like, on a super tight deadline, to take a step back and kind of... you know, decompress a little bit just so you don't get burned out. I think it's good to come back after a little bit to finish strong, you know?
Yeah, and for me, I'm like waiting to hear the last of the testing, waiting for Dave to do his final playthrough, which I think he's doing today. Well, not final, but you know.
Right.
And to go, all right, this is what's missing art-wise. I need you to do this, this, this. And for me to go through and go, all right, I want to add this, 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 and this. You get a couple of weeks to just, I've taken a couple of weeks to just, you know, stuff around.
Yeah.
Not stuff around, but work on something else.
And I basically am just waiting for, you know, final art assets and final sound assets and stuff.
Bugs and all that stuff.
Well, bugs I'm actually pretty confident that we're done with, because the last few posts in the forum have been like, hey, I played through this and I didn't get any bugs, so that's good. Yeah, no, I won't say that, but I'm thinking it. Anyway. I've started writing down... a bunch of ideas and a bunch of stuff for my world building bible for my next game.
It's interesting.
About six
it's
pages
interesting.
So far.
You've never really done any of that stuff before.
No, I haven't done it as detailed as I'm doing it this time around.
No.
So.
You did it a little bit for Shardlight.
Yeah.
After Dave and I sort of requested it, but this is the first time you've done it before started. I mean, you were drawing ideas for this project ages ago, but you know what I mean.
Yeah, I was doing like little background tests and style tests and stuff to kind of get an idea of how I wanted it to look, but I hadn't actually like built the world yet. It's been really cool and really interesting, and I'm having a good time. I drew a map and everything. I don't know if you saw it, but
I did.
Good. Well, I drew a little map, and that helps immensely, believe it or not.
Sorry, and I thought, I hope you make it more detailed. I'd like to see more stuff. Like, you know, more features, more regional features.
Of course. I mean, that was just a very basic geographic map. Then I wrote out about each area and plotted things in it. So, yeah, there will be definitely a more detailed map in the future. I mean, there's going to be an in-game map at some point, so that'll be the most detailed, but yes.
Yes. That is a requirement of in-game maps, is detail.
Of course. Anyway,
So what have you been playing? If you've been playing anything.
I was just going to ask you the question, but you asked me first. Okay, I haven't been playing too much. I started playing Assassin's Creed Syndicate, and I played a little bit of it, and I actually streamed a little bit of it, too, because the PS4 has that wonderful stream feature. So
PS4 share.
Yes, exactly. I played Bloodborne. I got the DLC for Bloodborne as well. And the DLC is interesting because if you finish the game, it kind of screws you over. Because as soon as you finish the game, you start over in New Game Plus mode, where the game becomes even harder. And in order to access the DLC, there's a boss that you have to beat to get an item. And if it's like the fourth boss... which means it's, you know, it's in a fairly tricky part of the game. So you have to go back and beat that all the bosses and then that boss in New Game Plus mode, which is pretty tricky, but I managed to do it. And then you're able to access this new area in the DLC where there are two new bosses. But I went in and I tried it and I played for like 3 hours and it kicked my ass. So I'm waiting for, you know, things to settle down and so I can call up good old DDQ and get him to help me co-op the area, because by myself it's really, really hard. But yeah, Assassin's Creed Syndicate's cool. I mean, it's an Assassin's Creed game. What can I say? The controls I find are a little clunky at times because they've streamlined it so much that you press one button for like three different actions, and sometimes it's easy if you're not standing in the exact right spot for the button to do something else that you didn't mean it to do, which is kind of annoying. But it's fun climbing up on stuff, and they added a grappling hook sort of zipline thing that is sort of reminiscent of Batman, so you get to zipline across the Houses of Parliament, which is kind of fun. The setting is beautiful. You actually do feel like you're wandering around Victorian London. The music is actually really nice, because I know that I've talked at length before about how I really love the music in Assassin's Creed 2, which was done by Jesper Kidd, and how he sort of went downhill in Brotherhood, and then they gave it to another composer, and it just kind of sounded like more of the same. But this time around, it's actually done by Austin Wintory, who you may know as the composer of Journey. So it's very, very, very stringy. It has a lot of cello and violin, and it just sounds really nice and rich and complements the scenery really well. And yeah, when I was wandering around the other day, I found some pedestrians who made a Monkey Island reference, which I then captured on video and tweeted because I was in such disbelief that such a thing could be found in a AAA action-adventure game.
It was funny because I was watching... I've been watching the CBS series Elementary, and because I'm drawing New York again, and that's set in New York. It's a New York crime drama, and I'm painting a New York crime drama. So I was like, oh, I'll immerse myself in this sort of media. And the other day I caught a Samuel Vange from the Discworld novels reference in the thing, and then last night I caught a Dresden Files... Well, I will say a Dresden Files reference. They literally called a character Thomas Dresden.
Oh.
And instead of being a magician, he's a mathematician. I was like, are you kidding? Like, it's one of the main characters of one of the episodes. I was in absolute disbelief.
That's pretty funny.
I said, what sort of nerds are writing this show? I guess the same sort of nerds that are watching it.
I guess so. And the same kind of nerds that are making games. But yeah, that's pretty much all I've played. I loaded up the second chapter of the new King's Quest game and played a little bit of that. And I wasn't too impressed. I might go back to it, but
I didn't like the title much.
Yeah,
I thought that was a bit weak.
The whole episode feels kind of weak. Like the pacing and the writing and the just feels kind of lazy and weird. I don't know.
Okay.
There's something weird about it. But I can't quite put my finger on it.
Well, it's King's Quest.
That's true.
King's Quest is pretty weird at the best of times.
Well, they've gone and made it like just a straight up comedy now. Like it's trying to be funny and it doesn't really succeed too much. But anyway.
Okay.
Also, I don't know if I encountered a bug or something, but there was a bit where I thought I had done something and then it was undone and there's no way to redo it. So I'm kind of pissed, but we'll see what
happens. Weird.
Yeah. Anyway, what have you been playing?
I finished Baldur's Gate 2.
Mm-hmm.
Again? And I really...
We said that at the same time.
Yeah. Like, I don't actually know how many times I've finished Baldur's Gate 2, but anyway, I've finished it with the game that I've been playing this time, and that sort of took up quite a lot of gameplay time, because I'm a real completionist, and I wanted to do everything, and I did do everything. And if you do that in a game, like that's like a 60-hour RPG.
You were playing the Enhanced Edition, weren't you?
I was playing the Enhanced Edition. So it was fun to see some new characters and some new side quests, some new storylines, see how they played out and stuff like that.
Had you played that one before?
Play with, that sort of stuff.
Okay.
What's that, sorry?
Had you played the Enhanced Edition before?
No, this was my very first time. Last year I played the Enhanced Edition of Baldur's Gate 1.
Right.
The Enhanced Edition of Icewind Dale.
I remember
both
that,
both of which
yes.
I like quite a lot. And, so this time I played the Enhanced Edition of Baldur's Gate 2. So I believe I've now played all of the Enhanced Editions that Beamdog Software have done.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm eagerly awaiting their standalone expansion pack to Baldur's Gate 1.
Mm.
So I enjoyed that a lot. Baldur's Gate 2 is still good. I noticed this time, I don't know if they've readjusted it for the enhanced edition or something, but it seemed easier than it had ever seemed to me before. And although in saying that, I was talking to Ivan, and he replayed Baldur's Gate 2 within the last year or so, and he told me, he said, oh man, it's really easy, like now, looking at it from an experienced gaming perspective. I used to think Baldur's Gate was pretty tough, pretty hard, and I used to think Baldur's Gate 2 was pretty hard. And playing it this time, I was like, well, that was really quite well-balanced and almost comically easy in the... Once you've worked out what spells count or what other spells, you basically just stick to that strategy and you've won. So, but, you know, I enjoyed my time with it, and I like the enhanced edition stuff. I won't say more, but as much for the ease of use that they've added to a rather clunky engine as for the new content they've added. The new content I liked, but I can see why some people don't like it. Some people accuse it of being a bit fanfiction-y and stuff like that. I can kind of see that. I liked it, mostly because I got to play a game that I'd played a lot and seen all the companions except a couple of them. You know, this time I got to take all new party that I'd never taken before. So I was like, oh, this is cool. I get to see new stories that I'd never seen before. So that was really fun. And some of the stuff that they added characters who are quite unique. So getting to play with their special abilities was really fun.
Hmm.
So, yeah. And I played Lara Croft Go on my telephone.
Lara Croft Go?
Yeah.
Is that an endless runner?
No.
Oh, it sounds like an endless runner.
No, it's a turn-based puzzle game.
Oh.
It's like, because Tomb Raider was always about solving the puzzles in the dungeon, in the tombs, sort of thing. So they turn it into a turn-based game, and I really enjoyed it. It's got a really simple but very striking 3D aesthetic with really nice colors, good sound, clever puzzles, some really clever puzzles. Some of them really had me scratching my head, and I had to sort of have quite a few goes at before I got them. But yeah, I enjoyed it quite a lot, and I was surprised at first of how well Tomb Raider works as a turn-based mobile game, but eventually I really got into it. I thought, you know, I'd seen screenshots and thought, this really looks good. The other Tomb Raider game, Lara Croft Jungle Run or whatever it is like that, it's just, it just feels like it's just, when you play it, it just feels like a mobile game, you know?
Mm-hmm.
Like, some games, you just go, oh, it's a mobile game. And then you get stuff like Tomb Raider Go, you get stuff like Sorcery, stuff like, what's it called? The good one. And, yeah, anyway, and you sort of, yeah, and you go, oh, this is, mobile gaming really does have potential when we step aside from just like, oh, it's a clone of the thing that you've all played and you don't like, but you're playing it because it's got this name attached to it.
Right.
So I hope Square Enix managed to do more cool mobile games like that that are unique and creative and fun.
I hope Square Penix manages to do more games as well.
Me too. And I played a bit of Arkanoid last night. I hadn't played Arkanoid for a long time. I used to be quite good. Well, I used to think I was quite good at Arkanoid and play it for hours. I fired it up last night. I'm terrible at Arkanoid. This is what it turns out. I am now. I'm so bad at Arkanoid. I got up to the 9th stage, and one block hiding in the corner, I just couldn't get to it. I had 5 paddles when I started that stage, and I used them all up by the time I got game over. So, yeah, but then I mentioned it on Twitter, and that, I was talking with Anatoly Boyoing and Brian of Square Waves FM, which you should all listen to, about Arkanoid clones, or Breakout clones, I should say, and Brian mentioned a few, and Anatoly mentioned a few, and then Brian mentioned DX Ball. And DX Ball, I'd been looking for this game for so long, because I loved this. Back in, like, the year 2000, or the year 99, I can't remember when I played it, but I think it was released, like, late 90s, mid to late 90s, and then a friend at school gave me a copy of it, and I played the heck out of it. Are you kidding me? I played it so much. And, yeah, I had never remembered what this thing was called, and I'd always been looking for it ever since, and Brian just, like, casually mentioned it, And I went and looked it up on Moby Games. I'm like, that's the one. That's the game I've been looking for I don't know how many years. So I got a copy of that. Actually, their website is still online. You can still go to their website and buy their games.
Wow. Well, it's well done, Brian. Always a good archivist.
Yeah, Brian's a great guy, and now he's helped me out. So, like, I played way too much the Expo. I played a lot of it.
I saw your tweeted screenshot of the Santa Claus, and it made me laugh.
Yeah. It's a Christmas miracle.
What happens if you knock out all his blocks? Does he go? Oh, oh, oh.
No, you have. That's how you solve the level. That's the goal. Literally, the goal is to smash apart Santa's happy face one brick at a time.
Well, that's fine, but I mean, don't you get some sort of reward for it? Like, you know, a little Christmas cheer.
How's he going to cheer when his face has been smashed into smithereens?
Mrs. Claus comes out and says, "Oh, you finally freed me."
That's a horrible thing. Move on. Well, that's everything I've played. I don't want to talk like that anymore. I actually tried to get a Twilight game about pale vampires, but it wouldn't work on my computer, so I put in a Steam refund for it.
Wait, what? You got a Twilight game? What Twilight game was it?
I don't know, some hidden object shit. I saw it. I was like, I need that in my life, but it wouldn't run, so I got a refund for it.
Oh, I'm sorry.
I was gutted. I wanted to play that shit.
It's literally.
You don't know that.
Hey, listen, I've played plenty of shitty vampire-themed hidden object games, by which I mean one, and that's Sinister City.
That was amazing. What are you talking about?
I know it was amazing, but that was because it was tongue-in-cheek. I'm sure Twilight would probably be like, oh, I'm actually a vampire. Boo-hoo-hoo. Wow.
You don't know that. Give it a chance. Give it a chance to prove itself, and then it didn't even run.
Well, that's... See, so it didn't prove
itself. I got some screenshots, some great screenshots of my mouse artifacting and leaving, like, a million cursor images in a trail I was making pictures of. I got some good screenshots of that.
Hey, speaking of screenshots, whatever happened to DOS ist gut?
You got lazy.
Yeah, you haven't updated that in, like, almost two years.
I haven't been playing photogenic DOS games lately.
Photogenic DOS games?
That was what the entire thing was about. Were you not paying attention?
Yeah, I guess. It was pretty DOS games.
Yeah.
So what ugly DOS games have you been playing?
I just told you, Arkanoid.
Oh, well, that's fine. All right.
and Starglider 2, I was playing that a while ago. You cannot get a good screenshot of Starglider 2 that will capture the magic that is Starglider 2. You can't do it.
All right. Yeah, I know. Sometimes gameplay and magic is hard to capture in stills.
Yeah. And Starflight, no one wants to look at Starflight. You just want to play it.
I guess. I've never played it, so I don't really know what it looks
like. What have you played? Other than Assassin's Creed 1 through to 40.
Lots of games.
Yeah, like GTA 1 through to 15.
Listen here. I've played plenty of games. I've been playing games longer than you.
That's true. You've been doing everything longer than me, except making sense.
That's pretty bad. Anyway, let's move on to our topic of the week.
Do we even have one? Oh yeah,
we do. God damn it! Don't you remember anything? Jesus,
I don't pay attention to what you say.
I know that, but Jesus Christ! At least try and remember things for professional appearances.
I'm on my second barley sugar of the episode, and it's rapidly dwindling.
How long do they take to melt in your mouth? It depends on your hand.
Depends on how enthusiastically you work your way at them.
Oh, okay. Is it like the Tootsie Pop where you bite if you're lazy like me?
Or well, you can bite any sweet and get through it.
I guess. Anyway.
Did I tell you I had a mighty perky nana?
No. What is... Oh, wait. I think I saw you tweet about it, and I was like, what the hell is that? And you didn't answer me.
I was at the grocery store.
Yeah.
A while ago, and I saw these things. They're mighty perky nanas. And there was a whole thing of them, and I thought, I haven't had this, and I'm interested in new things, so I'll purchase one. But then
they?
I purchased two. They're so bizarre, dude. They're like... It's like a Milky Way bar, but with fake banana flavor in the center, except it's more foamy than a Milky Way bar is, and it's the fake banana is like 10 times more gross than fake banana usually is.
So I guess that's where the nana comes in.
Yeah, that's, but why is it the mighty perky nana?
I don't know.
See, it's not perk, it's the least, it was flaccid. I tell you this right now.
When you said
it was mighty, not perky.
When I first read mighty perky nana, I was thinking nana as in terms of like grandma. As in
grandmother.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So I was thinking it was like something like there's this cinnamon chocolate powder drink mix called Abuelita, which is
Abuelita.
Yeah, it's it like,
does mean grandmother.
It does. My mom drinks it all the time when it gets cold.
Oh my god. She,
why is that funny?
Oh man, that's like calling your computer Amiga.
Oh yeah, it is.
That's sad.
It is sad.
I'm taking my jeans off. I don't know why you all need to know that, but whatever.
Yeah. Anyway, have you got a mighty perky nana down
there? Oh my god, what has this podcast devolved into?
What do you mean devolved? It was always at the bottom.
Yeah, right.
Anyway, yeah, right. The topic for this week is why do games take so long to make?
Because they're shit.
Yeah, so I've been watching the Double Fine Adventure documentary. Have you watched that?
No.
You should. It's really interesting. Anyone who hasn't should watch it, because it's free now, not just for backers. And one of the things that, it strikes a chord because you see that and you're like, holy shit, that's basically what game design is. But also it's like, okay, so they talk about doing things and they talk about deadlines and stuff. They're like, oh yeah, we can get this done by December. No, there's no way we're going to get it done by December. Oh no, no. So one of the things, and it strikes close to home too, because I know the feeling of, and I'm sure you do as well, is when you have a certain amount of work to do and you kind of are trying to set yourself milestones and things like that, it's very rare that you actually hit them. And even if you work hard, and even if you're diligent and you dedicate your time all day to doing stuff, which, let's be fair, is not 100% realistic, it's still difficult to get things done in a reasonable, I guess, amount of time. But then again, what is reasonable? So I just want to talk a little bit about like experiences that we've had working on projects, and if they've been delayed for whatever reason, and you know, kind of just recognizing bottlenecks and how to avoid them and things like that. So let's go into the distant past and talk about games that we made before, when we were hobbyists and enthusiasts before we became professionals. So were there any games that you made back in the day that you thought, oh, I'll make this real quick, and ended up taking a lot longer than you expected?
Mostly when I was a lazy shit. Like, a lot of times it wasn't that I couldn't do it or that, you know, anything like that. It was just like, I had the game. I remember the game. I don't even know how to pronounce my own game name, but it's like a smiley face.
Yeah,
I remember,
sure.
I had that.
With the bunny. The werebunny.
And I made it. Yeah, and I made it, the game. And it was sitting there on my hard drive, and I just had it there. And then, like, you know, I was doing all these other stuff, going into, like, bigger projects and everything like that. And then I finished those, and I was like, oh, yeah, I've got this. I remember I had to give it an ending or something like that. It took, like, 2 days. I just finished it up and just released it. And it wasn't that, like, oh, you know, deadlines or anything like that. I usually hit my deadlines a lot of the times if I set myself deadlines. You know, stuff like, if I gave myself deadlines, it'd be like I entered a one room, one week contest or a mags contest. And I always, you know, I finished those. I always made really simple, small stuff.
Yeah.
You know, like, that was my thing. That's how I made so many games, is that I set realistic goals. I set dumb goals of, like, I'm going to make a one-room game. I made a one-room game, and I released it. And I'm like, well, how hard was that? I'm going to make a game in a month. So I made a 10-room game in a month. How hard's that?
Okay.
You know.
Nah,
I never went,
true.
Like, I never, for a long time, never suffered from, you know, I got to do the best. I got to make the King's Quest 9, you know, or I've got a... I never really had any of that stuff. I never wanted to make the next big epic thing. It was impossible for me to fail because my goal for success was literally just to make a game.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's so good. That's a good attitude to start with, because a lot of people, when they start, like you said, they want to make the next big epic King's Quest or Monkey Island or whatever, and they make these way too ambitious projects. And a lot of times people start off making the games just by themselves. It's very rare that you'll get, you know, a dedicated team of hobbyists just working on a game.
Yeah, I always had someone for music and sound.
Sure, but I'm talking about like a bigger team, like, you know, one person doing programming and one person doing art and stuff, which theoretically should make a game go faster, but it's very difficult to keep motivation and morale going and stuff when it's just a hobbyist project. I mean, you have to have a group that's really, really, really dedicated and really loves what they're doing. I mean, it's been done before. We've seen it. And, you know, those teams have kind of gone on to become professionals and whatever. So
and you look at the big AGS games, stuff like Tale of Two Kingdoms, stuff like Heroine's Quest.
Yeah.
You know, you got these... I remember Dave saying, like, he joined in the AGS group competition or whatever it was when he made Two of a Kind.
Mm-hmm.
And, like, just nobody finished. It was...
Yeah, like, exactly.
Because it's hard. It is. Making games is hard. And finishing... Making games is easy.
Yeah,
making games is easy because you can sit down, right? You can be listening to this podcast and you can start making a game and you can be making the game. But finishing the shit when it's, you're like, oh, I've got the 16 bugs and I've got the 14 walk cycles and I don't want to do this stuff.
Mm-hmm.
That's the hard part.
Yep.
So making games is easy, but finishing them and completing them and sticking with them, that's not quite as easy. And making them good to the point where you're like, oh yeah, I'm satisfied with this. That's another reason I got so many games out, is I had really low standards. I just shat games out. I didn't give a shit. Like, I wasn't holding myself to like, oh, I've got to be the next Sierra. I was just like, I just want to make games. That was success in my mind, was just be a person that makes games. I find it weird now. I look at the AGS community and how it's grown. I'm sure you've seen a lot of growth in your time, but even the growth in my time, like, I remember being blown away that's like that I played at The Apprentice 2. That was the first big game, like, mm-hmm. I played in AGS, and I was like, how did two people make this?
Well, the first big game I played was Rob Blank, and I was like, how did one person make this?
Rob Blank one wasn't big.
Well, but the whole trilogy was.
Oh, I remember playing Rob Blank, Defender of the Universe, the first one.
Mm-hmm.
And it really inspired me. Not because it was amazing, because I looked at it, I was like, oh, dude, well, I could draw like this. If this is all you need to draw to make a game, then I could make games. Like, if this is all it takes. Like, you know, and I played Permanent Daylight.
Mm-hmm.
And I went, these games use the same curses. There's something going on here. I was like, there's something. And I was like, what's all this? And then I read about The Apprentice 2, and I played that, and I was like, I gotta check out what this engine is. And it turns out that my friends at school had been making a game in AGS. I just didn't know AGS was a thing.
Nice.
That's a good point. So, yeah. But, yeah, another thing, like, when I was working by myself, I didn't have to change anything. I didn't have to change any of my vision.
Mm-hmm.
Like, so nothing was ever wrong.
Right.
If I finished something and I was happy with it, then it was right, and it went in the game, and that was done.
Yeah, absolutely. Same here.
Yeah, you don't have anyone else's standards to live up to. It depends on your testers. There was a point where I really thought, like, you know, I got to push myself to improve a lot. And if people complained about my game a lot, they would be the person that I'd send the next game to test, because I'm like, well, obviously they care to make games good. So, like, if I remember Crimson Wizard, the guy, Ivan, who does a lot of coding stuff and work on the engine at the moment, he complained about one stray pixel in one of my games once, like one stray pixel. I'm like, I need to send this dude my games all the time so he can test them, if he cares that much to point out one pixel. He was like my go-to testing guy for a long time, just because he was so pedantic.
Hmm.
That's how you get better, is like you get people that are bored enough to find all the shit. But yeah, but other than that, I didn't have to live up to anyone's expectations except my own. I never made sequels because I knew that I'd never make a game that lived up to the thing I just shut out, because I never had a plan for anything. You know, I didn't plan them to be a series. So, for me, I never had that worry about, like, oh, will I hit the next deadline that I set for myself? A lot of the times when I set myself a deadline, it's a reverse thing. I'm like, all right, let's see how much I can get done by the end of the day. Yeah. Rather than, like, this is what I want to get done. So, I literally write out a list of everything that I have to do and just get as much done as I can for the day.
Right.
So, well, you know, yeah. So that I never... there's a lot of times I don't have that, oh, I didn't hit what I wanted to do for the day. So, yeah, I don't know if it's good working backwards or if it's bad, if I'd get more done if I did it the other way, but this way works for me. Because some days you have experimental days. At the moment, I'm in a whole new land. I don't know where I am. So, if I set myself, like, really strict to-do lists, I'd be shortchanging the quality of my work because I'm still learning. Like, I'm... Right. You know, I've slowed down because I'm trying to learn what I'm doing. I'm trying to figure stuff out. I'm animating in ways I've never tried animating before. You know, I've got all this more potential to do stuff, to do things better and worse. So I'm trying to make efficient use of my skill more than my time.
That makes sense.
Yeah.
But to the subject of self-imposed deadlines, like when I was doing the Ben Jordan games, I basically just did the first three in 1 year and then kind of took my time with the rest of them. And of course, we all know there was a 4-year gap between 7 and 8. But there were times where, you know, because I was doing it as a hobby thing and because I had a, you know, 9-to-5 job, there were times where I would go 6 months without even opening AGS. And you try and get as much done as you can, but there are times, like you say, where you just think, oh God, I have all these things to do. I'll do them later. And then later keeps getting later and later. But yeah, I mean, I would go back and do stuff like I did a remake of Case 2 between 7 and 8. And I remember setting a deadline and being like, yeah, I'll be done by February of, you know, whatever year it was. And February came and went and I didn't get it done. And people were like, where's the game? And I was like, you know what? I actually got kind of upset, not with people, but with myself more than anything else. Because I was just like, you know what, I'm sick of setting these artificial deadlines for this kind of project. Like, you know, it'll be finished when it's finished. I'm sorry that, you know, I can't live up to saying this is when it's going to be done and actually get it done, because I'm just one guy. And, you know, whatever. But, yeah, I think
it also kind of sucks in that sense when the thing that is the thing that you do for fun and for your own satisfaction becomes stressful
exactly.
or upsetting.
Exactly.
That sucks. Like,
Yeah. So, yeah, that was that. But moving on now to the professional careers that we've had, your first commercial game was Piss, and I know that you had a bit of a stressful time getting that one finished.
Yeah, it was funny because I was like, you know, there was a bunch of us making games all for this one, like, sort of thing.
Bundle.
And I was like, oh, I'm Ben Chandler. I'll make a big, you know, I'm the guy that makes games. Everyone knows I finish games. Flex muscles, all that stuff. I was like, I'll make a big game and, like, sort of do the very best I can. I want to really make this game and give it the worst title possible. So, you know, because if I'm going to sell out, I'm going to do it with at least some punk attitude towards that. And, yeah, like... I was the one that had to ask for extensions.
I forget who I was talking to.
I felt so bad about that, too, because I was like, I'm letting everyone else down.
Yeah.
But, like, you know, I did bite off a lot. I bit off more than I could chew with that game, and it kind of showed. But, you know, it was weird because they got to a period of work where I'd been super, 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 super busy, and suddenly there was going to be this 3-month gap in work, and... Like, just before that 3-month gap, Mark approached me and was like, oh, I'm doing this thing. Do you want to make a game and sell it commercially? I was like, yeah, are you kidding me? I've got 3 months off work. And I literally just, for 3 months, just sat at my computer and treated it as my job. And, you know, did the best graphics that I could, did the best coding that I could, did the best gameplay, the best writing that I could. I put everything I had into it. I focused so much on quality and little stuff that I lost track of time.
You finished it in 3 months, didn't you?
I need to ask for 2 extensions over the course of that. So
how long were the extensions?
I don't know, a couple of weeks each, I think. I don't know exactly how long it took me, but it was something like that. But yeah, like, it was...
So you did go over your intended time, and why did that happen? If you were dedicating your entire day to making the game, what was it, just that it was too big in scope for what you originally thought, or did you not get enough done in what you wanted in the time you had, or what contributed do you think to that needing to take extensions?
One of the biggest things is that I had this really elaborate section planned, and then I got it all out and got it all down and sort of built it all, and then it sucked.
Okay.
Like, really bad. And I just cut it. Like, I played it twice, I think, and I just deleted it. I just went, this is nothing at all like I envisioned it. And I just deleted it and spent a fortnight completely reworking everything, like completely re-envisioning everything.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, that's unpredictable. And I tell everybody now, like, people are like, oh, this is how long it's going to take. I hear people give this advice to new developers. Always ask for twice as much money as you think you need, and always plan for it to take twice as long as you think it's going to plan.
Mm-hmm.
Think it's going to take. Because, you know, stuff happens. It's not the big stuff that holds you up either. It's mm-hmm. the fact that you couldn't quite get that animation right, so you spend an extra 3 hours on it. And that happens once a week.
Right.
You know, you couldn't get that scene right, so you couldn't get it finished in one day. You had to paint a little bit of it the next day. And then the stuff that you thought you might get done the next day, you have to do, you know, you put little stuff off. So it's the little stuff that holds you up the most, as well as the big stuff holds you up too. But yeah, but in Piss, that was a big thing. Like, just the fact that this elaborate section I planned, I just went, that's all got to go. You know, and it took me ages to build and design, and I was really upset to let it go, because the bit that I replaced it with, I did not feel it was strong at all, but mm-hmm. I feel it was stronger than the shit that I got rid of.
Because,
you know, I love the feeling of cutting something that sucks. I love the feeling of just having something that you really thought would work, and then you know it doesn't work, and then being brave enough and bold enough to go, you know what, this sucks, get rid of it. That really is an empowering thing, because you're like, oh man, I'm not bound by an idea I once had at 2 a.m.,
Mm-hmm.
I'm not bound by some idea that I don't even really like that much. I just think I like it. I'm attached to it. I can do what I want.
Right.
So that took a lot. And plus the fact that I'd never built a game that big, and mm-hmm. I'd never built a game that big at that quality, and a lot of the stuff that I was doing there, I was making up as I was going, like, in terms of technique and stuff.
Right.
So I didn't plan a lot those days. For Piss, I planned out the major scenes and wrote them down, and like that gave me a lot of time to rewrite the ending. I think I rewrote the ending 4 times.
Mm-hmm.
I rewrote the major dialogue scenes 4 times, but then, you know, there was stuff where I had to go back and edit dialogue, and there's a day lost. All the little things.
Sure.
So yeah.
Sure. So yeah. So then after that, you've been, you know, just working on art stuff, but so have there been any projects where you feel like you haven't, like, you've had to ask for extensions for art stuff, or you've
kind of much... I mean, like, I'm usually pretty much on time with everything. I don't really have a problem with being delayed. I remember when Janet was porting the Shiver to iOS, and Dave kind of just mentioned to me in chat, I was actually working for Owl Cave at the time, and I was smack bang in the middle of the project that eventually became the Charnel House trilogy, you know. Mm-hmm. But back then it was just the one part we were doing, and mm-hmm. they gave me 6 weeks to work on that. And I was working full time, I was working 6 days a week then. I was like out of the house for like 13 hours a day, 6 days a week. I was pretty busy.
Yeah.
And Dave just offhand mentioned, like, oh, Janet's porting the Shiver to iOS, but we're not sure what to do because the sprites are really small and you can't touch them on the touchscreen. It's just too small and the backgrounds are really small. I'm not sure what to do. I was like, ah, pff, whatever, it's amazing. And that would take like no time at all to redo. And he was like, are you interested in redoing it? I was like, ah, yeah, take a weekend. That's a mistake. Don't say that, what I just said then. Don't ever say that to anybody ever, because you regret it, you know. It took me 4 weeks to redo it.
Right.
In the middle of my 6 weeks that I had to do the game I was working on for Owl Cave. And Dave was like, oh, I don't mind if you put Epiphany on hold. So me doing that kind of meant that 3 projects at one time was a bit much when you've got a full-time job. And, you know, but other than that, like, if Dave... I'm full-time now. So if Dave wants me to do something, he just says, I need you to do this. And I just stop what I'm doing and I just do that. And then it's done.
Sure.
It's not, you know, so there's no thing, yeah, and sometimes, I know at the end of Techno Babylon, the very end of the production cycle, Dave was like, I really don't like this one room scene that happens early on in the game.
Mm-hmm.
James, can you think of something better? You know, so James went away and came back with this new 5-room scene with new animations and all that stuff. So I had to put off working on Shardlight for a while. Well, I sort of made, I think it was an extra few weeks while I made this extra bit for Techno Babylon and worked it in with the other stuff around it. There was a lot of extra, just little things, you know?
Mm-hmm.
So that stopped me from working on Shardlight so much. But most of the time, like, yeah, it's good working with Dave because he gives me all like the information that I need.
Mm-hmm.
Like, you know, when Dave designs a game, he's just like documents everywhere. So whatever reference information I need, I can just go straight to the documents and look it all up. I know where, what's going to happen, who's going to stand where. I know what doors there need to be, everything like that. So when I work on a thing, I can just get straight into it. I never have to wait.
Mm-hmm.
And that's, yeah, communication is an important part. And because I've got that, I never hold anybody else up because I've got all the information I need to do my work.
Right.
So, yeah. So, no, I don't really have that problem anymore now that I'm working full-time.
Yeah, that makes sense.
And I shouldn't do. I mean, people say to me, how do you do so much drawing? I'm like, 8 hours drawing a day is a lot of drawing. You draw for 8 hours straight. If you can't do a scene a day in that amount of time, you're a more elaborate artist than I am, or you're being slow.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, there's a point where you can... I wouldn't be able to do a sort of... You know, now that I've moved up resolution, it's taking me a little bit longer than 8 hours to do a scene. But yeah, if I can't do a scene in 320 by 200 or 8 hours, that's a lot of drawing, man.
Mm.
It's a long time. Even the times when I have to scrap a thing and start again, which happens a lot, because I'm getting picky as I get more experienced, like... 8 hours is a lot. It really is.
It is.
So, yeah.
That's the thing, though. Like, I, you know, I still have this problem because, especially, you know, just doing writing and design only, you can't, it's, writing and design isn't like drawing. Like, you can't say, like, okay, well, I need this background drawn. You can't spend 8 hours, or, you know, I'm getting all muddled. Here we go. Let me start again. So basically, if you get, you know, someone says to you, hey, here's this background. I need you to draw it for me. You know, whatever. You spend 8 hours drawing the background. You can't sit down and write for 8 hours and expect that everything that's going to come out is going to be usable. Like, some days you can sit down and no ideas will come to you at all. And
yeah, but drawing is
super frustrating. No, I know, I know it is. I know it is. But
dude,
what
like,
I'm saying
like
is,
like half the brush strokes I make, I either have to undo or fix.
No, of course,
because they're shit.
Don't get me wrong. I'm not saying that you sit down for 8 hours and churn out something perfect. What I'm saying is that as far as like content creation, like on your end of the spectrum, you're already getting stuff that the designer has done, so you're working down the pipeline with stuff that already exists. Whereas the designer / writer or whatever has to make stuff up from the beginning. So if I spend 8 hours sitting there and I don't get any ideas and I, you know, can't make up any scenes for you to draw, that right there is holding up the project, right? Because, you know, so it's basically the chain going down. But yeah, like it's tricky because sometimes you can sit down, you write all this great stuff, and it just flows right out. Other times you just sit there and nothing comes to you, and you get frustrated wondering about, you know, what's going to come next. So, why did I start saying this? Well, I guess it's because that's a common holdup for games. I mean, like I said, in watching the Double Fine documentary, like, the bits where Tim Schafer has to write stuff, he locks himself in his office and he just writes, and just like puts down ideas and does free writing and things like that, and maybe something good will come out of that, you know. And then once
it comes out, I can be the same when I draw, man. There's times like when I have to create stuff, when I've put everything that's in the document in the scene, mm-hmm. and now I'm like, well, this looks fucking terrible. How can I make this look good? Mm-hmm. And I pretty much free draw. Like sometimes I just get my brush and a color and I just like dob it around going, is that look good? No, that looks terrible. Does this look good? No, that looks bad. Sometimes you just gotta poke at a thing and poke at it until it makes a noise, and you're like, oh, that's the noise. Keep poking it like that. That's making the noise I want it to make, you know? So, yeah, like, it's hard. Being creative is hard. That's why it's cool that we can do it. Like,
yeah,
it you know, if being creative was easy, then creative works wouldn't be so inspiring because everyone would be making Grim Fandango yesterday on the week. Oh, yeah, I made Grim Fandango 60 on the weekend. Yeah, it was good. It was, yeah, I got 100 for it. It was really creative. But being creative is easy. You know, it's not like, it's not like, being creative isn't a trade.
No, it's not. It's not. And it's not...
Drawing is a trade, writing is a trade, but being creative isn't a trade.
But yeah, it's difficult to quantify it in, like, that... Yeah, you can't say, hey, I spent 8 hours being creative today, because you can't.
I did $67 worth of creativity in the last 4 hours.
Exactly.
Like,
exactly.
You can't... Of course you can't do it like that, but I think a lot of the times when I go into a project, at least, a lot of the creative stuff that I want to put in the project I've already got in my head. It was funny, I was talking to my dad recently, and he was like, oh, I'm going to play this track, and I want you to see if you can guess who the track's by. And he played it. I'm like, I recognize that guitar playing. That's David Gilmour. He was like, yeah, you got it. I was like, are you kidding me? Of course I'm going to get that. But he was like, I watched this documentary, and David Gilmour was talking about like some of the riffs and the stuff, the ideas he used in some of these tracks he's had floating around his head for years. I'm like, yeah, I'm the same. Sometimes when I'm drawing a picture, I'm using an idea for a color scheme that I had 4 years ago. I've been desperate to use for years and never got to use in a game. The first scene that I painted for Unavowed is a color scheme I've wanted to use since 2009.
Wow.
I used it in Ortus, but that never got made. I used it in another game back in 2009 that never got made. I used it in, what was it called? The thing that I did for Warner Brothers.
Yeah.
And now I thought I recognized it in a game that's going to get made. I've been wanting to use this color scheme for literally 6 years.
Yeah.
Okay. 6.5 years. I've had this color scheme, and finally, I've put it into a game that's gonna get made. Like, so that's good. How it works for me. Like, and for me, writing was always the same thing. Okay. You know?
Yeah.
I'd have these ideas just floating in my head. I'm like, one day I'm gonna be able to use that.
So let's talk about bottlenecks and common things that delay game making. And I can say one that I'm guilty of and that I'm trying to avoid this time around, and I think that's poor planning. I think people, when you make games as a hobbyist, we've both done this, you just mentioned it before, you're used to making stuff up as you go along.
Yeah.
And that can be fine when you're doing a small project, but when you're doing a bigger project, and especially when you're doing a bigger project and you're working on a team, you can't get away with that as easily. I think planning and, you know, good planning is essential. 'Cause otherwise, you know, it's easy to just waste time. You know, you make something up and you think, oh, okay, let's just go with this. And then, you know, your artist draws it or whatever. And then it turns out that it sucks and you just wasted everyone's time because it's not like something that you planned that, oh, didn't turn out so good on paper. It's something you just made up because, you just did. And it sucked. And yeah, then you have to go back and redo shit. So
yeah, I mean, there's always going to be stuff you got to change. That's just life.
Yeah.
No blueprint for a game is ever the telling factor in how a game's going to turn out. Because things grow, you play it and you go, oh, okay, that sounded great on paper, but now I've played it, that's not good at all. I don't like that at all. That's just how it's going to be. But the more you plan, there's stuff like when I was drawing for Shardlight, sort of, 4 months in, you're like, oh yeah, I expect it to look like the Hunger Games. I'm like, well, why didn't you tell me that at the start? That would have been really helpful to know. Little stuff like, yeah, if I get... When James started work on Techno Babylon, he gave me this massive document, like this massive thing, and I just read it and soaked in this world, and I knew everything. When I came to draw a scene, I knew exactly what I was drawing, you know? In Shardlight, one of my real frustrations was that sometimes I didn't know what I was drawing. And Dave and I got you to go and write a world Bible halfway through because I had to know. And even then, I noticed, like, sort of things would change, and I'd go back and check the Bible, and I'm like, oh, that's out of date, now I have to ask you. So right. if you have that planning where you know exactly what everything is, then the people that you're working with sort of don't have to go, hey, what does this mean? Because they already know what it's mean because they've read the briefing. So, yeah, if you plan well, you give everybody else a real sense of what they need to do and what you're going for. Mm-hmm. Otherwise, you've got this vague idea like, oh, it's going to be this cool story and it's post-apocalyptic. But when you actually get to it, you're just like, this isn't really how I'd envisioned it.
Mm-hmm.
You know? So, yeah, planning is a really big part. And communication is another one.
Yeah, absolutely.
If you don't... Like, we had a lot of communication problems, which is just... Like, it was clear to me that you'd always done your own stuff. You'd never had to tell anybody else to draw.
Right.
You know, and you do, like, these elaborate sketches of a scene, but didn't tell me where the exits were. And I'm like, I know what a supermarket looks like. Where do they walk? You know? That's
right.
And it's weird that simple stuff like that can be the holding up point.
Yeah. You know, definitely.
Yeah, that's the... To you, it was important that you gave this idea of what a scene looks like. To me, I gotta know where the fucking person walks. Otherwise, we can't put that in the game.
Exactly. So, yeah. And that's part of the thing, because as you know, if you don't take into consideration that the other person, you know, doesn't know specifically what you're asking for, if you're not asking for, like, yeah, you draw the thing and you know because it's what you're envisioning. Yeah, you know where the people go, but that's not always clear to other people.
How many times do you reckon I've said to you, I'm not a mind reader?
A lot.
It's a lot.
It is a lot.
Like, and I mean, I'm not trying to be rude, but like...
No, like, of course, we can save all the specifics for the Shardlight commentary. But yeah, I mean, I think basically, in addition to me not knowing, you know, not being used to working on a team, I think that also part of the reason that this happened so much was because... For some reason, because it was, I always saw it as our project. I mean, and it is our project, but I always kind of saw it as sort of like, you know, maybe I was expecting too much that, you know, you would fill in blanks, you know, and I don't think you were expecting to have to fill in blanks, you know, I think you were expecting me to give you everything that you needed, which I didn't do, which I should have done, but.
Anyway. Yeah, and a lot of the times, if I'd see a blank, like when I was playing the game, mm-hmm. I remember there was a puzzle. I guess after the big everything turns to shit, there was a puzzle that you had for ages. Puzzle goes here, like just in the thing.
Yeah.
And I eventually jumped in. I was like, okay, this needs to be a puzzle, and I just designed a puzzle that day because I was like, this has been not a puzzle for way too long. But most of the time. Like, when it comes to art and stuff like that, once I've got my to-do list, that's it. I'm heads in. I burrow in and I, you know...
Sure.
I'm paid to be an artist. My job is an artist. And as much as I love designing stuff, my skill is art.
Yeah, sure.
So I try and hold back on the design front, you know. Mm-hmm. And also, you know, it's like when you've got this big project and you've got these huge sort of... ideas, you don't want to get too carried away putting stuff in, because I mean I can tinker all day when it comes to coding cool fun shit.
Mm-hmm.
I love doing that stuff, I really do, but there comes a time where I've got to be practical. I'm like, this game needs to get done, or you know,
definitely.
there's one point, I think I took one day out to code this thing where you cut a thing up, you know, and I think that was worth it.
Mm-hmm.
But that costs a day. That's another background gone from the game that we couldn't put in because I spent that day doing something else. So, yeah, you know, you've got to be time conscious.
Well, I mean, yeah, but I mean, like that, it definitely happens. That's definitely a point to consider. Yeah, if you're on a tight deadline, but yeah, I mean, it's not like we had to sacrifice a background for a puzzle or anything like that.
No, no, but that's like in terms of what I can contribute to the game.
Yeah, of course, yeah.
You know.
I mean, this was a unique situation. I mean, I would think most team projects, you know, everyone's going to be doing what they are supposed to be doing. I think, yeah, just overlap of duties definitely contributes to bottlenecks because, like you say, you're taking time away from their major skill.
Yeah, and sometimes that. you've got people. I love writing and I love designing,
mm-hmm.
but that's not my job. That's not why Dave hired me. You know?
Right.
And when you try and step in and do stuff that's not your role, I think a lot of times that time gets wasted because that might. I mean, for example, you spend a lot of effort and a lot of time doing portraits for Charlotte.
Right.
We're not using those portraits, you know, and that's a lot of effort. A lot of energy you spent that could have been spent on other shit.
Right, exactly.
You know, and like, if it was your own project, that would have been, you know, you would have used those projects. But you're now working to someone else's standard.
Right.
So, yeah, it's like, I find it quite good with Dave. I know I can play his game and say something to him, and it... Usually if I tell Dave, like, oh, I don't know how I feel about this, he straight away goes, yeah, I've been wondering about that myself, because Dave overthinks literally everything.
Right.
But I know I had sometimes a hard time explaining to you, like, if I played a thing, I'm like, oh, I'm not quite sure about this bit. It was really hard for me to get across to you why I wasn't feeling that bit, or why, you know.
Right.
There were points where I'd be like, ah, we could probably cut this whole bit without affecting anything, or, you know. I feel this is... And you'd be like, well, why? Tell me what you think. And I was like, I don't know how to explain this.
Yeah. And that was a source of frustration because, you know, I'm not used to getting people telling me, you know, to cut things. And B, because, you know, I also overthink things a lot. And I'm like, well, how can I make things better? How can I learn from this experience? Yeah. I need to know why. Well, you know, it's whatever.
Sometimes you can't put that into words.
Yeah, yeah.
If Dave tells me, like, oh, this could look better, I'm like, yeah, it's shit. Don't.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know? I mean, sometimes Dave tells me that I have to redo something, and I'm like, I'm glad you said that, because I was having an off day, and I didn't realize how bad it looked.
Mm.
You know? But,
yeah. So, yeah, it's important, I think, too, in order to reduce bottlenecks, to kind of get an idea of what's... I mean, this is very difficult, but it's... If you can develop an idea of what's good and what's not good... That'll save you a lot of time, right?
I also think you got to be aware that making a game isn't a series of iterations.
Yeah.
It's not just a thing that you just linearly plug away at. You know, the project I'm working on now, it was started months ago. Dave got Jen Hepler, who worked for BioWare, and then sort of there was this whole big controversy and she quit to make Facebook games. And he was like, hey, come work for me. And... You know, so I've been watching this project unfold for months, and I've been soaking myself. You know, I bought a book on New York architecture. I watched 13 episodes of This Old House set in Brooklyn, where they redid a brownstone, just because I wanted to see how the buildings were made up of. I'm watching Elementary. I get months to sort of immerse myself in an idea before I even started, before I put the first, you know, pen stroke down.
Yeah, sure.
So you've sort of... It's not just the planning, but allowing yourself to get comfortable with what you're about to do.
Mm-hmm.
Sound like you're preparing for a crime or something weird.
Well, you kind of weird. Are. I mean, the games we make are a crime.
Oh, my God. but, yeah, like, it takes a while. When I first started working with Dave, it was hard because I'd always been doing my own shit, and I'd draw a thing, and you'd go like, oh, no, that's not how I envisioned it. I'm like... I don't know what he wants. Right. You know, now I've been working for Dave.
So basically, when you first started working with Dave, it was like working with me for the first time.
Yeah, it was. And because it was my inexperience, you know?
Right, Dave and this time it was because of my inexperience.
Yeah, Dave would say a thing.
So get experience, kids. That's basically what we're trying to say. Get some experience. Otherwise...
Well, experience counts a lot. But yeah, it was really... weird for me to go from just drawing my own shit, and if it was shit, it didn't matter because who cared but me? Right. To like, now I'm being paid for this, and it looks shit, and he's not happy with it, so I've got to redo it. And I don't know how to make it look good. So, I mean, the first version of Rosa Blackwell that I did took 30 something iterations to get right, and it still looks shit. Like, you know, I go back and play it now, and I'm like, the second version of Rosa Blackwell I did for, like, Epiphany took, like, way less. Because I understood more what he wanted. Right. You know, when I first drew scenes for Dave, I was like, I had much weirder color scenes, much bolder color schemes. Mm-hmm. And I had to really tone that back, mm-hmm. you know. And now, I think, I hope, I'm better at working my own... I've said this before on the podcast, but it bears repeating, is it took me a long time to re-engage myself after disengaging. Like, I detached in order to make stuff that I knew would work for Dave's games.
Mm-hmm.
Because it was nothing at all like my games were like. You know, so I sort of just set myself back. I'm like, okay, I'm going to do it in this style. That's not my style, but this is how I'm going to do it because this is Dave's game. It's his company. It needs to look like something he wants to sell,
right?
Which is fair enough. You know, you wouldn't hire an artist to draw something that looks nothing at all like what you wanted. You'd be like, that's not what I wanted.
Mm-hmm.
So then I've slowly, not slowly, but gradually, I would say, over the years, been easing my vision back into that. And now I feel like these games look like my games.
Mm-hmm.
I feel like this is the stuff I want to draw. I'm using my ideas. I'm very lucky in that Dave is cool enough to let me draw New York with a green sky or with a red sky or whatever I want. You know, he's cool enough to, oh, you want to make a whole game in yellow? Yeah, do it. Who cares?
Mm-hmm.
I'm very lucky like that. And so, you know, I'm sure if I was working for other people, if I drew New York with a red sky, they'd be like, Ben.
Yeah. What? Well, I mean, he showed me the first scene that was in the game, or an early scene already that's in the game. And he said, yeah, look at it. It's high res, but it still looks like a Ben background. I was like, well, I mean, I'd be surprised if it didn't. But, yeah, I mean, that's, you know, and the sprites too. He showed the sprite and he was like, yeah, the first time he did it, it looked like George Stobart, and now it looks like a Ben sprite.
Yeah, it was funny that everybody said, you know why I look like George Stobart? Is that I drew the guy with a really pale yellow skin tone,
mm-hmm.
and then I didn't want to make up a hair color, because making up color palettes for a new game is the worst thing ever.
Yeah.
So I literally just used that skin color as the hair color, and then just redid the skin color.
Oh, wow. I didn't see the quote-unquote George Stobart sprite, but yeah.
Nobody saw that.
Well, kidding? Dave obviously saw it.
No, he didn't. Oh, he didn't see the Stobarts, right? Oh, yeah. A lot of people. The two people that saw it was like, Broken Sword.
You've become the embarrassed crocodile that you hate.
I am. I am the toothy reptilian, and I'm embarrassed about it. Now I know why he's embarrassed about it. I can empathize with Charles.
Look at that. You've grown as a person today, I think.
I've come full circle. Like the Ouroboros, or however you say that shit. Yes. Except I'm a crocodile, not a snake.
Close enough. Anyway, do you have anything else to say on the topic, or shall we wrap up?
Yeah, I do have something else to say.
Okay. Is it play more DOS games?
No, I already got you to say that at an awards ceremony.
Yeah,
I don't.
Okay.
I'm pretty sure that the people that listen to this podcast understand that I feel that way.
Yeah, I know.
Anyway. I would say this. I've changed a lot in the years that I've been making adventure games. You know, I've been making games for quite a while now. It's mm-hmm. weird to think that I'm working on my sixth Wedge Jedi game. Like,
and I'm working on my third one.
Yeah, I remember saying in 2007, like, there's this guy in New York, and he's starting to make games, and he's like quit his job, and that's what he does, and I'm going to work for that.
You in 2007 as well? I mentioned in my Golden Wake postmortem that, yeah, in 2007, Dave said to me, you've been paying your freeware dues for a long time. You should go commercial. And I said, I should.
I just decided in 2007, like, there's this guy in New York that makes games, and I was like, I should work for that guy.
Yeah.
So I'm like, I did everything that I thought was the right step to take to get there, which clearly was all the right steps, otherwise I wouldn't have got here. But
yeah.
I cared a lot about getting stuff done,
mm-hmm.
and that was a skill that I learned. I learned, like, you know, if you told me tomorrow, I need this background done, it's done tomorrow, like, no mm-hmm. matter what, if, you know, but... I think once you've got that skill down, once you've got that time management skill down, where when you need to, you can make stuff happen instantly, like as quick as as quick as anyone else can work, you can work. Once you've got that figured out, I think it's time to step back from, like, oh, the game's getting held up, everything like that, and remember that you only get one chance to make Shardlight.
Mm-hmm.
If you make it shit, you don't get a second chance to go, oh, Shardlight's coming out next year as well, and this time it's going to be good.
Right.
So, I used to care a lot about rushing, and I've probably given some very bad advice, both on this podcast and around the forums, about doing stuff quickly, not redoing things when they're shit, that sort of thing. I think as much as it's important to learn to manage your time, it's also important to remember that part of using your time efficiently is looking at the stuff you've done and assessing whether that is up to the level you believe your game deserves.
Absolutely, and I can say this from personal experience, that if I had gone back to a Golden Wake and looked at certain bits more critically and thought, you know what, this doesn't work, this could be improved, rather than, oh my god, I need to get this game finished because this is how my money is going to be earned for the next, you know, I've taken so much time to work on this game, I need it to be out so I can get money from it, then I think it would have been a better game. Because, you know, I look back on it now and I'm like, you know, I still like it, but there are definitely things that I would have done way differently if I were to redo it. And, you know, I don't get that chance again. I'm not going to be able to make the game again. I would love to if I could, but it just, you know.
The beautiful thing is that there's other games to make.
Exactly. Exactly.
You know, and that's a really great thing. But I think it's also important to remember that, is that, you know, that's an important part of time management, because quantity is, you know, very important, but quality is also important.
Yeah, exactly.
You know, I used to be of this opinion, like, oh, I get paid, you know, I've got a... Especially when I started working full-time, I was like, oh, I'm getting paid regularly, I got to make sure that I hand work in with the regularity that matches the regularity with which I'm getting paid, so I got to do all this work.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and I was less concerned about quality, but now I know how quickly I have to work. I got that down.
Mm-hmm.
I can do that. That's not a problem anymore. Now I'm trying to make sure everything is 100% to be. I've said this to you before. Don't work to the best of your ability. Work slightly better constantly. Always work a little bit better than you did last time. Always. Mm-hmm. Put that little tiny bit more extra effort in and see how you can push yourself constantly. And, like, I know in the time that I've started working for Dave to now, I've grown a lot, not just as an artist, but as someone to work with and stuff. Like, if you gave me a scene 2 years ago, I'd draw the scene. Now I look at it, I'm like, okay, you've given me an office building. How can I make this office building different to the last 10 office buildings that I drew? How can I make this one interesting and unique?
Right. Yeah. That works.
That's my message for today.
Good. All right.
Because I think productivity is important, but quality is also important.
Yeah. All right. Well, good. Well, this has been our podcast. This will definitely be the last podcast of 2015. So... for all of those of you listening who celebrate, happy holidays, have a happy new year. We hope to be back and podcast more in 2016, as we have done for the past, 4 years now. We've been podcasting a long time.
And thanks to everybody for being along for the ride.
Yeah.
Like, you know, especially this year was like this crazy time of the two of us making a game together.
Yeah,
and there were ups, there were downs, like, you know, it was a hard game to make.
It was a hard game to make, but you know what? We made it, and it's a good game, and we're still friends, so that's the important thing.
Yeah, it was interesting, like, I kind of wonder, I don't think, like, when you're in the sort of the business of creating a game, you don't let that stuff spill outside, you just get on with the thing of making the game, you know, no matter what discussions you've had, or whether you've come up with a good idea, and I'm trying to work that in now, and I'm like, oh, I can't tell anybody about it, but sitting back and looking on it, like, you know, there are a lot of ups, there are a lot of downs, and we both put a lot into the game.
Mm-hmm.
And it's cool to have people that have been along for the ride, even if they're just listening to us ramble every now and then.
Yeah.
So, yeah. So happy holidays to everybody.
Yes, and if you want to follow us and hear us ramble even more, you can follow us on Twitter, though you probably already do. I am at Grindislav Games.
I am at Ben_304.
And together, we are at BCT_podcast. So, yeah. Well, I guess that's all we've got to say right now, except brush your teeth, kids. Bye.
Yeah.